Hello and welcome to Think Ahead, a London Business School podcast, which offers evidence-based discussions and insights to help you navigate big business issues. I'm Julian Birkinshaw, Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship and Vice Dean at London Business School, as well as the host of our Think Ahead podcast series. As we start a new year and look to the future, this podcast will look at whether AI can be the answer to our environment crisis. As we continue to see human impact making an indelible mark on the Earth, we are on a race against time to avert a global catastrophe. Can AI help us find the fastest solutions to the climate and environmental crisis? I'm delighted to welcome Jean Pauphilet, Assistant Professor of Management Science and Operations at London Business School. Jean, welcome to our Think Ahead podcast.
Thanks for having me, Julian.
So we're going to dive in, and I've got a couple of questions to get us started, because obviously we've got AI, artificial intelligence, as a huge sort of topic of interest around the world. And then we've obviously got the environment, which is the biggest crisis or challenge of our day. First of all, why have we suddenly seen this explosion of interest in AI? This is an area you have deep expertise in. Just help us understand why this has suddenly taken off.
So I think what we see in recent years is that AI, machine learning first, and now even generative AI, has really come into the mainstream. From a use case perspective, people are seeing more and more examples of AI recommendations that are being done every day in their lives. Our lives are more and more digital, are more and more online, and we can see product recommendation. We see our smartphones that are just gigantic computers compared to what we had only a few years. So as, you know, end users, we see more and more impact and potential impact of digitization, machine learning algorithms. And also for companies, it's becoming increasingly easy to use this technology. Like, the technology has matured in such a way that now any company can deploy, start, you know, experimenting with deep learning algorithm, generative AI algorithm, even in a few hours. You know, you have a lot of packages, a lot of open source code and software is available. And so now you have everyone's creativity, and it's like, oh, it's a new tool available. Look at, you know, how people have been playing with ChatGPT in a few hours when it's been released.
And it seems to me, of course, that it's a consumer product now, meaning everybody has access to it with, you know, with 30 seconds worth of training. But companies have been doing this for years, right? I mean, an awful lot of what we are now playing with ourselves has been available to companies for a while, right?
Yes, I mean, some companies. I would say what's been happening in the past years is reducing the cost to entry into those technologies. So before that, a decade ago, some companies might already had access to it, were developing it, but they needed very experienced team and people. And you also see that in education. With the spur of analytics degree in master level and now in undergrad major, you have people of all ranks in the companies that are training those techniques. Well, before you had to hire the brightest PhD people.
And obviously, there are many ways of using artificial intelligence, and companies have been using it to, you know, optimize factories, and banks, for example, have been using it for credit card fraud protection. I mean, there are dozens of applications. Tell us why you think it might be particularly helpful in an understanding and addressing the environment crisis.
So I would say more than helpful, it will be needed in a world that is going through this crisis. And for me, the reasons are twofold. If you look at, you know, the climate science, what it's telling us is, A, that we're going to live in a even more resource-constrained environment. Many resources, starting with natural resources, but it will expand to everything we produce from there, is going to be more constrained and not as widely available as it used to be. And second, the variability of the environment is going to increase. So we're going to have less reliability in the availability of resources, the availability, for example, of power, of electricity production, of agricultural production. This increased variability is also going to make the environment businesses live in more complex. And so given those two things, resource constraints that are going to be tighter and increased variability, I think there's a push for companies to be even smarter about the way they make decisions, even more efficient in the way they operate.
So you're saying that we as academics at business schools, the tools that AI enables us to kind of build are particularly well suited, as it were, to solving these types of problems.
Exactly. And it's great also to see that AI as a tool is still evolving and improving, because we're going to need more and more of these tools.
So look, I want to dive into some of your own research, because obviously we can talk and we will talk about some of the other applications. But I want to home in on some of the work that you've done as a management scientist. There's one piece of work you're quite well known for around cleaning up the oceans, which have got too much plastic in them. Why don't you just give us a quick sort of summary of what that's about? What was the problem that you were addressing? How did you tackle it?
So this is a collaboration with a Dutch NGO called The Ocean Cleanup, and their objective is to clean up 90% of ocean plastic pollution in 2040. So, of course, it's a very aspirational and ambitious goal. The idea here is to see plastic as any emissions. Okay, it's something we emit. Actually, millions of tons of plastics are being emitted every year into the ocean. That comes from fisheries, of course, fish vessels, but also from landfills, from plastic waste, and so on. And so the idea here is, and the goal of this NGO is basically to build the equivalent of carbon capture for plastic.
Right.
Okay? So the idea is, if those emissions have been made, have happened, can we take them back from the environment? And there are different ways to do so. And so one particular technology we've been helping them with is trying to do this in the open sea. Mm-hmm. So because of sea currents, it turns out that the plastic waste tends to accumulate it in certain parts of the ocean. And in particular, they've been operating in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is basically twice the size of Texas, three times the size of France. And it's
of plastic. I mean, it's not
of highly concentrated plastic. It's not a plastic island. You cannot walk on it. But it's 80,000 tons of plastic in this particular region. And because of currents, plastic everywhere from the Earth, or at least from the Pacific, tends to converge to that area. And so they've developed a big fishing net. They're dragging a net with two fish, trying to catch plastic this way. The issue is that this is quite inefficient if you do it in a random or stupid way. And so what we've been working with them is a routing algorithm to route their system in the ocean to catch as much plastic as possible. So I usually summarize that as a very sophisticated example of Pac-Man. You know, this video game where you need to eat a lot of fruit. It's exactly the same thing. Like, we're Pac-Man with this massive plastic collecting system, and we need to catch as much plastic as possible, given the fact that the plastic is moving, of course, with the sea current, that the system does not move fast because you don't want to catch any marine life. And you also have wave height, wind, sea current that's also impacting your ability to navigate.
And so your contribution is to build an algorithm to sort of plug in a bunch of data, develop a way of modeling the movement of the plastic so that you can tell the trawler where to go next. Is that correct?
Exactly. So here, the idea and the core of the algorithm is taking in data about weather, current weather forecast, about plastic movement, which is also a model from plastic dispersion, and building an algorithm that computes the optimal route and computes the route that would lead the best yield in terms of collection to increase the efficiency of the collect. And so what we see is that by being smart about how to navigate, we can increase the yield by nearly 60% on average.
So over and above what they would normally have collected, you get an extra 60%.
Exactly, just by being smart in where you go in that massive...
And you're doing this in sort of in real time? Because, I mean, I guess the weather is changing day by day.
So we update dynamically. The idea is to... So we're currently rolling out the algorithm so that they can use it offshore when they resume operation after the winter. And the idea would be to recompute let's say, something like every day. Of course, you want to adapt to new forecast, but you also don't want to change every other, you know, every second, because you don't want to be shooting a moving target either, right? So then I think something like every day is probably what we could do. In any case, we're helped a little bit by the system because they collect the trash. It accumulates in a zone like a trash bag that they need to empty regularly. And in that case, they need to stop. Okay, so we don't need to schedule for like a full month ahead anyway. So currently what we're doing is trying to plan for the whole week, but re-evaluating this decision every day.
And so you've built this algorithm. I guess you continue to refine it. They're plugging it into their system. They're telling the trawler where to go, and you make the saving. And are there any other applications of this same piece of research?
This particular problem, there's something very specific about plastic dispersion, right? So that was an important specificity of that problem. Then there are a lot of very related problems that are highly relevant in other use cases. So for example, they've been talking to a young startup in France that is doing weather forecasting for maritime routing. And here there's also an opportunity just for routing ships, regular ships, you know, that can maybe use the current to reduce the amount of fuel they need. So there's also a big question, especially for the longer trip. So if you're interested in trans-Pacific or transatlantic trip, it's usually something that takes between 1 or 2 weeks. So there's a huge challenge on whether you can optimize these routes to leverage sea currents in order to save something like 1-3% of the fuel.
Good. Before we leave ocean plastics, I just want to throw into parentheses an example of an alumnus of LBS. His name is Tez Steinberg, who is, as we speak, rowing from Hawaii to Australia. That is a 5,000-mile journey on his own, in his own boat. And he's doing this, at least in part, around raising awareness around plastics in the ocean, and he stops periodically and shoots videos. If anyone's interested, his website is called unitedworldchallenge.org. So there you go. It's fascinating what some of our alumni get up to.
It's very impressive.
Yeah,
very
can't imagine. I mean, I think he thinks it's going to take him 60 days to cross the Atlantic. He's on day 17 at the moment. Let's go back to the environmental crisis more generally. And there are so many aspects to that, from, you know, agriculture and wildlife conservation to smart energy to waste management. I'm just going to pick up on a couple that I was reading about in preparing for this podcast. So one was Google DeepMind, and DeepMind is the subsidiary of Google that's based in London. They created some sort of state-of-the-art AI model for making medium-range weather forecast with unprecedented accuracy. And then a second one I was reading about, Carbon Re, which is, I believe, a spin-out from Cambridge and UCL universities. They've created some sort of AI system for looking at big industrial processes in, for example, mining and chemical companies for decarbonization. And my understanding is that they've used AI to help reduce the fuel-derived emissions. I mean, you may not know the details of these, but give us a sense of what's going on in those two very different use cases, one around weather forecasting, one around industrial processes. What are they doing? What are the potential kind of savings or benefits we get from them?
So these two use cases, actually, they match very well with what I was saying early on in being the two main drivers of AI in a world facing an environmental crisis, namely we're going to get short of resource. So we need to be more efficient. So, of course, here, things like what Carbon Re is doing, improving processes, improving efficiency, are areas where analytics in general, but AI in particular, can really make a dent. And now carbon emissions are just becoming another metric that we're looking at. But, of course, there would be water usage. There would be other type of resources that we're going to look at, and social impact as well. And here there are a lot of opportunities to optimize those processes. So figuring out how to better operate to reduce waste, to reuse some of the waste as well. There's also a lot of opportunities, maybe more with the generative AI view, to figure out new ways, new processes. So, for example, something I've been involved in, for example, is using generative AI to find pathway to synthesize some molecules and trying to find new pathways of synthesizing molecules that are maybe more efficient from a waste perspective, an energy perspective, or things like that. The second use case you were mentioning, the Google Forecast tool, is very much related to increased variability. We know that crisis, especially extreme weather events, are going to be more violent, more frequent, and harder to predict. So really, we need more and more of those tools. And also, more and more companies are going to get impacted by those tools. Like, if you think of a fashion retailer, maybe they thought weather was not important from their operations perspective, maybe for their sales, but maybe not so much for their operations. Now you're seeing, for example, Panama Canal reducing, you know, the throughput by half just because of water shortages and low rainfall. It's going to have a massive impact on any industry. So I think those tools are really needed, and the number of people and companies that are going to rely on those tools is going to increase because the implications of those weather events are going to be even more felt.
And so I am seeing a pretty clear pattern here, which is that across all these different use cases, we're finding much better ways of harnessing our existing resources, essentially doing things in a more efficient way. I guess that's the essence of any sort of optimization activity. I mean, just before we move on to some of the challenges or limitations, are there any other big areas around the environmental crisis issues that you think AI might be able to be helpful in? And this is more in sort of brainstorming rather than in terms of current solutions.
So I think that one area where I see a lot of opportunity is definitely on satellite imaging, because monitoring is expensive. I think sensors are expensive. Yeah. And satellite offer an incredible opportunity to monitor large amount of space quite efficiently if you think about the area covered. And I think there's a lot of work being done, and I think I'm very much looking forward to it because I think there are a lot of things related to weather forecasting. I see people looking at satellite imaging to predict yield for agriculture, to predict the ability of forests to capture carbon, for example, things like that. So I think this is one area where AI, deep learning, has been shown very successful, image analysis, video analysis, where really no other machine learning method was that efficient for those kind of data structure, and where I could see a tremendous amount of use cases and potential.
Okay, so the final segment of this podcast, I do want to talk about risks, costs, etc. I mean, there's a very obvious one, which is that using AI algorithms, using large language models, is expensive. And we've been reading about, you know, the boom in ChatGPT, for example, is suddenly making these costs rise, skyrocket even. Can you help us with how expensive it is, and or ways of keeping the cost under control?
So I think that before ChatGPT, most people were thinking that the expensive part of AI is in training the model. Right. Once you've trained a model, fine-tuned a model, you can use it afterwards fairly inexpensively, right? And so people have been looking at the cost of training for a while. I remember Hugging Face, which is an open source AI company, at some point, I think it was in 2019, was saying that to train a model, it took the same energy consumption as 40 American households for a year. You know, so it's a big amount, right? I think it raises question on which are the companies that are able to afford this fixed cost of training. But it's fair to say that the common thought was that this is the price to pay, then to run it would be fairly efficient. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing with GenAI is that there's a lot of interest, there's a lot of potential use cases, and so there's a lot of volume. Mm-hmm. And so OpenAI, I think, as of today, has something like 100 million mm-hmm. weekly users, so users that are active at least once a week. So even if it's one query is inexpensive, you have to deal with this gigantic amount. So to give you an idea in terms of electricity required, Google estimated that using LLMs instead of what they're using for search queries on the web would be 10 times more expensive.
Wow. Wow.
So I think now there's a growing concern of the cost, not even in the training, but in what people call the inference phase or the operational phase, just because of the volume it will have to manage.
Yeah, and of course that's an invisible cost to most individuals. I mean, to all individuals, we have no concept of that background cost. I did note in researching this is a few years back, Google DeepMind AI reduces Google data center cooling bill by 40%. So obviously you can also use AI to help you to reduce the costs of using AI, but there's a certain circularity there. So any other risks or worries? I mean, sometimes we worry a lot about sort of data protection and stuff, but this is not user or consumer data. This is sensor-based data. This is imaging. I mean, I don't imagine the privacy issues in this area are anything like as bad as they are in the individual user area, right?
I mean, I think as in many areas, there's a question of open sourcing, mm-hmm. right? Some of this data, they might be not sensitive from a individual perspective. They might be sensitive from a national perspective with satellite imaging.
That's for sure.
And there's a question of sharing the data, given, you know, the money that can be made and the business opportunities there. There's a question of making this data accessible to all to benefit most use cases. So for those images. Then, of course, it depends on the use case you have. You can think of many, for example, things related to energy efficiency for buildings, for example. You were giving this example of Google. If those type of algorithms come into individual homes, of course, there would be a question then.
Good. I've got one final question for you. In terms of what is it you teach the students? What do you want the students to get out of your classes at LBS? I mean, are you heavy duty on kind of algorithm development, or are you helping them to try to, you know, tackle big questions or what?
So what I usually tell my students is that, so I teach business analytics. Mm. What I usually tell my students early in the course is that what they're going to learn is first and foremost a mindset, a mindset of being analytical in their decision-making process, namely being data-driven, trying to get data, objective data on what's happening, and trying to make sense of the data and make the decision based on that, not only wild guess or intuition, but trying to be a bit more evidence-based. And then, of course, there are tools. And there are old tools, there are new tools. Yeah. Some of those new tools we try to teach, but tools, you know, get outdated. I think the mindset, what we've seen here, is that this mindset that has been around for many years is not outdated. Far from it.
Thanks. And of course, I will note that there's a good 10 or so faculty at London Business School who work in various areas around management science and optimization. And so, I mean, perhaps this is a subject for future podcasts, but there are many ways in which London Business School is, I think, helping to sort of improve business for a better world. Let me say it like that, because it does seem that our job at London Business School is around improving how business works and helping to train the next generation of leaders. But it should all be focused on doing what is actually good for the planet as well as what's good for business. So, Jean, thank you so much for your fascinating insights today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Think Ahead, brought to you by the editorial team at Think at London Business School. Follow us here for more episodes or find us on Apple or Spotify. For more faculty research insights and information about our Think Ahead event and podcast series, go to london.edu/think. You can also sign up there for our free regular email newsletter to get updates on our latest publications direct to your inbox.